Welcome into a brand new episode of the Believe in Royals podcast. I'm Alex Fuse. There's Jeremy Danner. And we have a very special guest on today's podcast, Pedro Grifol. He is a bench coach for the Kansas City Royals. Pedro, first off, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today. I know we were talking before we got started. We're only just about a month and a half into the season, but kind of break us down. What has this season been like for you in particular?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here. It's my pleasure. Second, it's I'm exhausted. It's been a hard, really hard 42 games. It's been a kind of a roller coaster for us because we started off really well and we got on an 11 game streak, bad streak. And then in the last, you're looking, you're 0 for 11 and you're looking at your upcoming schedule. And like we were talking before, you got Giolito, Rodon, Kopech, Cease, Woodruff, Burns, and you're like, okay, well, it's time to either buckle up or we might lose the season right here. And these guys have really answered the bell, and we're 4-2 against those guys, and that's a mark of a good team. It's a mark of a winning team.
Your schedule coming up, apart from Tampa Bay, is in second place. In theory, it's a little bit easier than what you've faced over the past week. But you still prepare the same as you do for when you know you're going to face tough teams?
Jeremy, you know what I've learned in the big leagues, over my 9 years here and 10 overall in the big, that there's really no easy schedule. I mean, these are major league teams that, they might end up not where they want to be, but at any particular moment during the season, every club is going to get hot. And you might get that last place club at the end of the year that you might have gotten them in that week where they were hot. And there's really no easy schedule. I mean, especially early when everybody thinks they have an opportunity to win and they're making moves to win and they're running a bullpen the way, the way they need to run it to win a game. Now, as the season goes on and you're in, late August, September, teams that are not in it, maybe they go into that development mode and just to make sure they get themselves prepared for next year. But right now, 42 games into it, these guys, everybody thinks they got an opportunity to do something special.
I think that's a great point because I feel like when you look at 2020, it was a 60-game season, and I think the casual fan almost seems to forget what a 162-game season is like because when the Royals started out hot, then they went on the 11-game losing streak, it was, oh my gosh, this season's over. But you look at the Royals' hot start really benefited them because when you go on an 11-game losing streak, they were only 3 games below 500 at the end of that streak. So they still have so much time left. So how has the adjustment been to go from 162 games to 60 games to back to 162?
Well, it's not so much of an adjustment just because we've been doing this for such a long time. And, we know the feeling of 162. The problem is that you can't win a pennant in April and in May, but you can certainly lose one. And you really have to be careful, how easy you take it kind of in stride, like, oh, this is just a bad streak and, we'll get through it. Yes, you will. However, you can't let it get too far, as a club, like I said before, we were 0-11 and we're looking at our schedule and the pitching coming up and we're like, okay, we got to buckle up here because we're digging ourselves in a hole and these guys really, they answered the bell. I mean, we've beat some really good pitching in the last 6 days. And, those guys in Milwaukee, those guys are really, really talented. And it's not just them. I mean, basically they're playing a two-part game. I mean, they got their starter that can take them 6 or 7. And then they got that, really they got the ability to just close a game out. We were able to get both those games against two big time starters and big time bullpen. So, to answer your question, last year was fun. There was a sprint, this year, obviously, it's a marathon, but you got to kind of navigate it, you know, correctly, because if not, it can get away from you quickly.
I was at the game Tuesday night at the K, and then I watched, you know, last night's game. And to me, it looked like this is what Royals baseball, this is our brand of baseball, timely hitting, bunting. I think we had 2 months in a row, and like that gets me excited. I think bunting is sexy, especially in those situations. When things are going well, do you feel like it's easier for a team to do what it is they do best versus trying to push and get out of it when it's not going well?
You know what, I was thinking about this last night, listening to the radio on the way home, and they were talking about, you know, the Royals brand of baseball and, you know, how we win games and this and that. And I said, you know, my thought process is pretty simple. You know, you have to hit homers to be successful over 162 games. You gotta put the ball in the seats. You gotta get that 3-run homer. You gotta take a 3-run lead and turn it into a 6-run lead and shut the door. You gotta be able to do those things. You're not gonna be able to bunt your way through a pennant. You're not gonna be able to do that. However, when the homers are not available, okay, and guys are not, we're just not clicking right now on that part of the game, how are you going to beat, you know, a Woodruff and a Burns and a Giolito and a Rodon? How are you going to do that? So, you know, we've shown the ability to win many different ways this year. We've shown the ability to win via a comeback with homers. We've shown the ability to win tight ball games with bunts and stolen bases. We certainly have shown the ability to win, you know, with, you know, pitching and defense. And, you know, so it's a good mark of just a good team and just the way we find ways to win. So, but at the end of the day, and I want people to really understand this, is that, you know, in this league, you have to drive in, you know, runs via the home run, because other teams are doing it. There's teams out there that are just waiting for that home run, and when they don't get it, you know, they don't win. But when they do get it, you know, you're gonna have, how do you combat that? How do you play with that? And you have to, you know, you have to do the same. We have guys that can do that, and these guys will start, you know, hitting homers, and we'll start putting balls in seats and 3-run homers, and we'll start doing that. But in the meantime, we're able to stay afloat because we know how to play the game, and we have capabilities of playing the small game too and tacking on a run here and there and holding on with good pitching and defense.
One term that is like skyrocketing right now in the game is game planning. But just through having conversations with a casual fan, most fans don't really understand what goes into a game plan. Can you break it down a little bit? What exactly is game planning and why are you so passionate about it?
Well, there's a lot of pieces to game planning. You know, you got the offensive side, the defensive side. You obviously got the, you know, the pitching side of it, which is probably the most important side. You know, you got to navigate their lineup. You have to decide, okay, who's not going to beat us in this lineup? What pitchers do we have available that night that match up with certain blocks in their lineup? Maybe two or three hitters, like this pitcher matches up with this block, that pitcher matches up with that block. And if that doesn't exist, that, you know, that well, then you match up pitches like this bullpen pitcher that we have that has this elite pitch matches up with this block in their lineup. So game planning is huge. It's not the end all be all. There is an instinctual part and a human element to this thing. And I think we do a nice job of just combining both.
When we started so hot in April, a lot of, you know, national media and other fans were saying, this isn't who the Royals are. And then during that losing streak, we're all saying, this isn't who we are either. Do you think both groups are right?
We have a fun team. We have a fun team that knows how to win. Who we are as far as wins and losses, I don't know. You know, that again, 162 games, you really don't know who you are after 42 games. What we do know is that we're going to compete every single day. We have talent. We have talent enough to do something special. And over 162 games, you know, there's so many things that can happen, and everything is rhythm. Everything is just momentum. You know, one game can carry you into an 8-10 game winning streak. The one thing I do know is that we have the pieces to run a 10 game winning streak, and we have now the experience to, you know, when you hit a little bit of a rut, we have the experience now to know how to shut that losing streak down, which I think it's really, we survived the, you can say we survived it. You can say, well, it was an 11 game losing streak, but in my opinion, you know, we survived what could have been worse than 0-11. When you're looking at an 0-11 and you're looking at facing those type of pitching, it could have certainly been an 0-14 or 0-15. If you don't have that grit, that talent, that drive, you know, to say, okay, this, you know, the buck stops here, you know. So we now have, we've had the ability to have early adversity, early experience to kind of nip those, you know, those losing streaks in the bud. And we certainly have the talent to go on one of those where we run out 14 out of 16 or 14 out of 20.
Why do you love the game of baseball so much?
You know, I was never exposed to any other sport really. So maybe as a young kid, it's all I knew. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the competition of it. But the real reason is that when I watch a baseball game, I don't really watch a game, like, you know, follow the ball. That's not how I watch a game. I watch the game within the game, kind of the game planning, the, you know, why did this manager do this? Why did that pitcher just throw that pitch? Why, you know, why don't they hit and run? Oh, that was a great hit and run, great safety squeeze. I mean, so it's just those little, the game bit, you know, within the game that really I enjoy. I mean, I love this sport. I think this sport has a hell of a lot more intangibles than what people think. The mind is a huge part of this game that most people really don't understand. Because over 162 games, there's no doubt that every player, okay, that steps on that field is going to go through adversity. There's absolutely no way they can't over 100. Nobody can sustain success for 162 games. So the mental strength that it takes to navigate 162 games, for me, you know, watching all of that play, it's a thing of beauty for me. I there's a lot of things that I love about this game that for me makes it the best game in the world.
Do you guys switch up your approach dealing with that adversity? Everyone always says the baseball players have this short memory and the previous day is gone. But when you're in a streak like that, it's got to be tough to let that go. But at the same time, you talked about momentum. When you have that success, do you want to refer back to the day before and build on that? Or is it still that short-term memory? Every game is its own thing.
That's a good question. We try to do the short-term memory thing. But when you're not having success, and it kind of prolongs a little bit. And what I mean by prolonged, it could be, you know, 5 or 6 days or 30 at bats, you know, in the big scheme of things, they're not a lot of at bats, you know, obviously, but an 0 for 30, a 5 for 30, you know, it wears you down. It wears you down mentally. So there are many ways to combat that. Obviously prior successes kind of keep you level headed to where you're like, okay, I've done this before. I've been in this slump before. I've gotten out of it before. I've been the best player in the game before. And these are all things that, you know, we as coaches try to remind these players that you've been here before. You've survived adversity before. You've come back to be one of the best players in the game, you know, during a small stretch of time. And then you've gone back to adversity. So most players have gone through adversity. They've gone through successes that as coaches, you got to try to continue to remind them of who they are, who they're going to be after 162 games. and just trust the process. On the mechanical side, at this level, it's really not that much mechanical. However, when you make a small little adjustment, it kind of tweaks the mind to where, okay, now I'm back to where I need to be. And again, it a small mechanical adjustment becomes a huge mental adjustment that kind of gets you out of it. So there's a lot of ways to attack it. There's no one way. Every player is different. Every player thinks different. Every player is wired different. So you just got to continue to be creative as a coach.
You said at the beginning, you're tired. I think everyone that's in the game of baseball, it is a mental grind. You talked about mindset. How do you keep your mindset fresh in just this long season?
You just got to, and for me personally, I have, a few hobbies. I love talking to my family. I love, FaceTiming with them. It kind of takes my mind away from the game. I like working out. I do it every day. I put my headphones on, I listen to some music, and I'm just, I just remove myself from this game. It's not physical. It's really not physical. It's just that mental grind that gets you. It's just, you get exhausted. So it's not physical exhaustion. It's just mental exhaustion. But once you come home, you sit down, you relax, you reflect, you watch a little, baseball on TV, watch other clubs go through the pressure. You kind of relax and get ready to go and do it again the next day. It's the great thing about this. And I've always said this because when I was in the front office, it just never stopped. It was just 24/7, 365, and the one thing that always, attracted me to be on the field and just be a coach is that, go as hard as you can for 8 months. Because at the end of those 8 months, you're going to have 4 months where you don't even have to think about this game if you choose not to, And for me, that's what I do, And be honest with you, that's what my family does too. I mean, we go at this thing really hard for eight months. And then once I go home, there's really no baseball. It's just, what can I do around the house? How can I serve everybody? How can I... what do you need me to do, other than talk about the game or anything like that? I just want to relax. And normally that takes about, 4 or 5 weeks. And then you start, your mind starts how can we get better next year? How can we, let me read this. Let me write some notes. Let me reflect on the season. So it's one of those things where once you take that little break, 4 or 5 weeks later, you start getting that urge again, when do we go again? So that's all I got on that.
With Alex Gordon's retirement, to me and to fans, it looks like that grinded out leadership has been passed to Whit Merrifield, even almost symbolically with Gordo throwing the first pitch to him on opening day. Do you see that in the clubhouse? And can you talk about his development in the time that he's been with the big league club?
Merrifield's?
Yeah.
Merrifield's got a great baseball background. They won a championship at South Carolina. He's a really smart player. His father played, professionally. He knows what this is about, and he's a smart kid. He knows what leadership's about. The cool thing about this club is that we have multiple leaders, and they know how to lead together. It's not just one guy leading this club. And that's the cool thing about it, that it's not like if something's happening, this guy's going to call a meeting or that guy's going to call a meeting. This guy's going to take care of it. This guy's the voice. That's not who we are. We have multiple leaders in this clubhouse. We have experience in this clubhouse. We have world champions in this clubhouse. This is a really unique clubhouse to where these guys know how to lead together. It's pretty cool.
You talk about just, it almost seems like it's a melting pot, this Royals team. And you talk about the identity. If you could put one word on this identity of the 2021 Royals team, what word would you choose?
Grit. This club, I've really, I've been a part of two World Series teams, and those were unbelievable teams. And those guys were just relentless winners. they just knew how to win. They knew how to fight. They knew how to, they were together. It was an unbelievable ball club. This club just never lets up, man. This, I mean, even if we lose a game, the energy and the intensity that is displayed throughout nine innings, it's really unbelievable. I mean, we've had some comebacks this year to where a lot of clubs would just, you know, put their head down and say, okay, this game's over, let's get them tomorrow. And we've come back 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, you know, and through that 11 game streak that we had, we lost some heartbreakers. I mean, games that we were up 4-0 and just all of a sudden it got just taken away from us, or, you know, and those games are tough to bounce back. And I can only recall one game that we might have been a little bit flat, but even through those 11 games, and even the games that we were down, the energy in that dugout and the grit in that dugout is really like anything I've ever seen before, including that 14 and 15 club that was so special.
I was going to ask you if you're seeing parallels between those teams, because if you go back to the early teens and even before that, it seems like there were times where like, what's going to happen to lose this game? But then in 2014 and 2015, I felt like watching the games, there was no lead that was out of reach, and then no lead that we didn't want to tack on to. So are you seeing similarities to that team and this team now?
There's no doubt. I mean, the teams are they're very similar. These guys know how to win games. And we've shown that here in the last few days. You know, you beat that kind of pitching, you have to be doing something right, because you're certainly not going to put balls in seats to beat these guys. You know, we did yesterday, and it was a 3-2, you know, fastball that Michael Taylor put a good swing on it and ball went out of the yard. But the last 2 days, I mean, we've had to fight to really score some runs against that, you know, talented pitching staff. So I never like to compare a world championship team with anybody else, just like I don't like comparing Hall of Famers to players that are still playing and are not Hall of Famers. It's not fair. However, when it comes to grit, determination, just that mental strength that you need to navigate 162 games at that type of energy, this club is right there with that 14 and 15 club.
This is our favorite part of the show, Pedro. It's a fast five quick round, so it's five quick questions. Uh-oh. And you have as much time to answer as needed. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, so the first one's interesting to me. I called baseball in the NECBL, which is right near the Cape Cod Baseball League. You played on a Cape Cod baseball team back in the early 90s. What was that experience like for you?
That was the funnest time of my life. You head to a little island. There's a bunch of teams there. You play baseball. You work during the day. I didn't have to work, thank God. But I went to the gym in the morning and played in the afternoon. And that was probably the funnest time I've ever had in my life in baseball. And I'm grateful to have been able to do it. And I did it twice. I did it in 90 and I did it in 91. So Cape Cod, for me, any young kid out there that is trying to, you know, determine or decide whether they should play there or not, go play there.
Who has the best walk-up song on the team?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I don't notice any walk-up song, and I don't know why everybody does. I don't think there's a day that goes by. Did you hear that guy's walk-up song? And I'm like, no, what is it? And I don't know why I don't notice it, but I don't know any or notice any walk-up songs. Don't ask me. Maybe it's that old school mentality that, you know, that still is lingering in there somewhere.
Take me back to the Brady Singer game. That's what I'm calling it. When some of the coaches got ejected from that game and Mike Matheny got ejected and you had to take over as a manager. Now, What happens when a manager gets ejected and you are the interim manager?
Well, in our case, I don't know how they do it in other places. But in our case, our game planning and our pre-game planning to manage a ball game is really, really good, to a point where if that happens, I know exactly what Mike wants to do and how he wants to do it. You know, we still certainly run things through, you know, through him during the game. He's not there. He's tossed, but he's, you know, back in the clubhouse, but you know, it's the game planning. I mean, we sit together before a game. We know exactly what we want to do. Obviously, it doesn't always work out that way, but it really doesn't venture out that much. You're not always going to stay on that road, but you're not going to veer out and head in another direction. So it's happened once this year. It happened once last year, and both times we've executed the game plan that we planned probably at 6:30.
It seems like every week there's something that happens during not necessarily our games, but a game across the league that gets everyone riled up and talking about the unwritten rules of the game. What are your thoughts on the unwritten rules of the game?
You know, there's certain rules that obviously have changed. I'm not going to particularly go into rules. I'm going to go on respect of the game, you know, respect of the game, respect your opponent. And if you stay within those, you know, two lanes where respect your opponent and respect the game, I think you'll be fine. You know, everybody, I'm hoping everybody knows, you know, right from wrong. And if you don't, all you got to do is, okay, you know, how do I respect my opponent in this certain situation right here? And hopefully you'll stay within those lines if that's the question you ask yourself. But I don't think you can't ever ask yourself those questions when it's time to make a decision. And most of the times it's, you know, blowout games, right? That's kind of what we're talking about here. You know, the things you got to ask yourself is, you know what, respect the game and respect your opponent, and you'll make the right decision most of the time.
And then the last one for me for the Fast Five, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Yes.
You know what? Just like my lack of knowledge on walk-up songs, I have zero knowledge on karaoke or actually just music itself. I know what type of music I like, but as far as karaoke, I'll leave that up to Gene Watson. He's the karaoke king.
What kind of music do you like?
Fleetwood Mac. I'm into Fleetwood Mac now. I love Fleetwood Mac, you know, but Fleetwood Mac, I don't, you know, everybody thinks just because I'm, you know, Cuban, I might like that, you know, that salsa and that thing, you know, only when Allie and I are dancing a little bit. But other than that, I'm staying with the country and, you know, that style of music.
And then Pedro, the last question we have for you on the podcast, if someone walked up to you right now and said, who is Pedro Grafal, what would you tell them?
A serving person who cares about people, cares about the game, and cares about, you know, always trying to do things right with a lot of faith.
I love it. Well, Pedro, thanks so much for taking the time this morning to come on the Believe in Royals podcast.
Nice job, guys. Thank you.